Okay, so today we're diving into a pretty significant legal case, Enslin v. Coca-Cola. At first glance, it might just look like another data breach case, but it's actually way more than that. This ruling really clarifies how these data breach cases are argued and decided, especially when it comes to your own personal data.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we've got all the court documents right here, and our goal, I guess, is to break down all these key legal concepts, standing, economic loss doctrine, breach of contract, all that stuff, within the context of, well, a data breach. So it's like a crash course in a really important area of data security law. I think for our listeners, many of you are going to be dealing with sensitive information in your future legal work. So this case is all about data security obligations, right? And what are your rights if your data gets compromised?
Exactly. So let's get into the specifics of this case. It all starts with Shane Enslin. He was an employee of Keystone Coca-Cola, which was later bought by Coca-Cola Enterprises. So, like many employees, Enslin had to give the company a bunch of his personal data as part of his job. This included his social security number, bank account info, even his driver's license information. I mean,
All the sensitive stuff.
I know, right? Super sensitive.
Yeah, this is the kind of information that, if it ends up in the wrong hands, can cause a lot of damage. And what makes this case even more interesting is how this data was actually stored.
The company had all of this sensitive employee data just sitting on unencrypted laptops.
Unencrypted, wow.
I know. The kind that are easy to lose, or as in this case, get stolen.
Yeah, oh no.
Between 2007 and 2013, get this, 55 unencrypted laptops containing the personal data of almost 74,000 Coca-Cola employees were stolen,
Wow.
including Enslin. I mean, that's a ton of personal information just out there.
That's a huge security oversight, right? The potential for harm there was massive. And unfortunately for Enslin, that potential became a reality. He ended up dealing with identity theft and a whole bunch of fraudulent financial activity.
Oh, man.
And he tied all these issues directly back to the fact that his personal data was stolen from those laptops. I mean, it's a pretty clear line of cause and effect.
Yeah, absolutely. So, of course, Enslin decided he had to take legal action.
Yeah, makes sense.
So he filed a class action lawsuit against Coca-Cola and a few related companies. And he didn't just stick to one legal argument either. He threw in a whole bunch of claims, breach of contract, saying that the company had an obligation to keep his data safe, negligence, arguing that they were careless with his data, even a claim of bailment, which is kind of like when you give someone your stuff for safekeeping.
I see.
And he also brought some claims under the Driver's Privacy Protection Act, like he was trying everything he could legally.
He was exploring every avenue. Yeah, that's pretty typical in litigation. Filing the lawsuit is only the first step, right? Predictably, Coca-Cola wasn't just going to take this lying down. So they filed what's called a motion to dismiss the lawsuit. And, for those of you who are maybe new to legal procedure, a motion to dismiss basically says, even if everything the plaintiff says is true, there's just no legal basis for this case to move forward.
And this is where things get really interesting because not all of Enslin's claims made it past this point. The court only allowed two of them to go ahead, breach of contract and unjust enrichment. All the others, the negligence claim, fraud, the Driver's Privacy Protection Act claim, all dismissed.
Interesting. So what was it about these two specific claims that made the court say, yeah, these can go forward?
And why did the others fail?
Well, that's the real heart of the case, right? And that's where we find the most valuable insights. It all comes down to some really important legal principles, particularly the whole idea of standing under Article 3 of the Constitution. And then there's the economic loss doctrine. So let's start with standing.
Let's break down this whole standing thing. For those of us who aren't like constitutional law experts, what does Article 3 actually mean in this context?
Basically, Article 3 of the Constitution, it's all about the power of the federal courts. And one super important part of that is that anyone who wants to sue, they have to have what's called standing to sue. It means they have to be connected to the case and actually harmed by whatever law or action they're fighting against.
So how do you prove that? Like, what do you have to show the court to say, hey, I have standing to sue here?
So there are three main requirements for standing. First, the person suing, the plaintiff, has to have suffered a real concrete injury. like something specific to them, not just some vague complaint that anyone could have.
Yeah.
Second, there needs to be a link between the injury
right.
and what the defendant did. So you have to prove that the defendant's actions actually caused the harm.
Right.
And third, it has to be likely that the court can fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like if the court rules in your favor, it has to actually be able to remedy the harm.
So how did the court apply all of that to Enslin's case?
Well, they decided that Enslin did have standing.
Okay.
But only for those claims that were directly related to the actual money he lost because of the identity theft and fraud.
Okay.
The court specifically said he suffered no mere abstract injury. They pointed out that he had fraudulent purchases requiring time, effort, and money to combat.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that concrete and specific injury we were just talking about. The key takeaway here is that just having your data exposed might not be enough to sue in federal court.
Right, right.
You often need to be able to show that you actually lost money.
Yeah, that makes sense. He wasn't just saying, oh, my data's out there, something bad could happen in the future. He'd already lost money. But what about his argument about the risk of future identity theft and the money he spent on things like credit monitoring?
Well, that's where his argument for standing fell apart.
Oh, okay.
The court saw those injuries as too speculative, like maybe they'll happen, maybe they won't.
Mm-hmm.
The risk of future harm wasn't concrete enough. And the credit monitoring costs, the court thought, were more like proactive things he chose to do, not a direct result of the data breach itself.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a huge point in these data breach cases.
Okay.
Courts usually want to see actual harm that's happening right now.
Right.
Not just a possibility of harm in the future.
And you mentioned the second requirement for standing, causation.
Yeah.
Even though the data breach happened over a period of years, from 2007 to 2013, mm-hmm. and Enslin experienced the identity theft later.
Right.
The court accepted this but-for causation, at least for now.
Yes. At this early stage of the case, when they were deciding on the motion to dismiss, they basically accepted Enslin's argument that if Coca-Cola had taken reasonable steps to secure his data,
right,
then it wouldn't have been stolen and used for fraud. They recognized the time gap, but thought it was plausible enough at this early point to let those claims related to actual financial loss go forward. Now, it's important to remember, this doesn't mean he'll automatically win on the causation argument later in the case,
mm-hmm.
but it was enough to get past this first hurdle.
So standing was a partial win for Enslin.
Right.
But then his negligence claim was thrown out. You mentioned something called the economic loss doctrine. What's yeah. that all about, like, for those who haven't come across it yet?
So the economic loss doctrine, it's this big principle in tort law.
Okay.
Now, tort law deals with civil wrongs that cause harm.
Right.
And the economic loss doctrine says that when your losses are purely financial,
mm-hmm.
meaning just money, not any physical injury or damaged property,
yeah.
you usually can't sue for negligence if those losses come from a contract you have. Mm-hmm. The idea is that contract law is the way to handle economic expectations and losses that you agree to in a contract.
So in Enslin's situation, since he had this employment contract with Coca-Cola,
right.
and his claim was that they were negligent in handling his data, leading to financial losses,
mm-hmm.
this economic loss doctrine blocked that negligence claim.
Exactly. The court basically said that the losses Enslin claimed were purely financial,
mm-hmm.
and they stem from the alleged failure to protect data he gave them as part of his employment contract.
Right.
So negligence wasn't the right way to go about getting those losses back.
But there are exceptions to this economic loss doctrine, right?
Right, right.
You said something about a special relationship exception. Did Enslin try to use that argument?
He did. There are certain relationships where the law says there's a higher duty of care.
Mm-hmm.
More than what's usually laid out in a contract. These are called special relationships.
Mm.
And they often involve a ton of trust and confidence. They can actually make it so you can sue for negligence, even if your losses are purely financial.
Interesting.
Good examples are like a doctor and their patient, or a lawyer and their client.
Yeah, I see.
Enslin argued that the employer-employee relationship should also be considered one of these special relationships.
Okay. And did the court agree?
Nope. They said pretty clearly that a normal employer-employee relationship doesn't have that same level of special trust
mm-hmm.
that you see in those other examples where there's an exception to the economic loss doctrine.
Okay.
So while employers definitely have legal and ethical duties to their employees,
right.
The court didn't think that simply keeping employee data safe in this particular case was such a special duty that it would override the economic loss doctrine.
Okay.
So his negligence claim was dismissed.
All right. So negligence was out, but his breach of contract claim was allowed to continue.
Right.
Why did the court decide to let that one proceed?
This is where the idea of promises, both explicit and implied, really comes in.
Okay.
Enslin argued that when he made the employment agreement with Coca-Cola, there was this understanding that they would take reasonable steps to protect his data.
Okay.
Whether that was said out loud or just implied because of their relationship and this sensitive information involved.
Right.
He was basically saying, I gave you all this sensitive stuff as a condition of my employment, and in return, you were supposed to keep it safe.
Yeah.
And the court thought that was a plausible argument. They called it a mutual exchange of consideration.
Hmm.
Enslin gave them his PII, personally identifiable information, in exchange for the job. And Coca-Cola, on their side, had the duty to protect that information.
So the court saw this as a deal, basically?
Yeah.
He gave them data. They were supposed to protect it.
Exactly. They accepted the idea that keeping employee data safe could be seen as an unspoken part of the employment contract.
Right.
So if Enslin could prove that promise existed, maybe through company policies or standard practices in the industry.
Yeah, yeah.
And then prove that Coca-Cola broke that promise by not having decent security measures, leading to him being harmed.
Right.
Then he could potentially get damages for breach of contract.
Okay, that makes sense. Then we have the last claim that survived the motion to dismiss, unjust enrichment.
Yeah.
That sounds like a completely different argument.
It is a bit different. Unjust enrichment is what's called an equitable remedy.
Okay.
It's more about fairness than strict legal rules, like in contract or tort law.
Yeah.
It comes into play when someone unfairly benefits at someone else's expense.
I see.
In this case, Enslin was arguing for a specific kind of unjust enrichment called opportunistic breach.
What's that opportunistic breach?
It's basically when a party breaks a contract, not because they can't fulfill it, but because they think they'll get something out of breaking it.
Oh, okay.
Enslin's argument was that Coca-Cola might have intentionally skimped on security to save money, knowing full well that their employees' data could be at risk.
Yeah.
And that by doing so, they unfairly benefited while their employees suffered the consequences.
So he was basically saying Coca-Cola knew the risks, but cut corners anyway to make more money.
That was his point.
Okay.
Now, the court did say that proving an opportunistic breach and unjust enrichment is tough.
Yeah, I bet.
It's not an easy claim to win, but at this early stage, they let it move forward.
Mm.
The key thing was Enslin's claim that Coca-Cola directly saved money by cutting security costs. That was enough for the court to say, okay, we'll let you keep going with this unjust enrichment argument just in case the breach of contract claim doesn't work out.
Right, right. So we've covered a lot of ground here. What are the biggest takeaways from this Enslin v. Coca-Cola case?
Yeah.
Especially for those who are interested in legal practice, you know, what should they really take away from this?
I think there are a few really important points. First, like we talked about with standing, if you're suing for a data breach, you've got to show that you've actually been harmed, like you lost money because of fraud.
Right.
It's not enough to just worry about what might happen in the future or even what you've spent to try and prevent it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Second big takeaway is the economic loss doctrine.
Right.
It throws a wrench into negligence claims, especially when there's already a contract between the parties.
Yeah.
Unless you can show that there's this special relationship with extra duties of care. A negligence claim for purely financial damages is probably going to get tossed out.
Yeah, that's a big deal, especially since so much data is collected and handled under contracts.
Absolutely. And then the third key point is that the language of the contract really matters. Both what's written down and what's implied by the relationship and what's normal in the industry.
Okay.
If you can argue that there was a promise to protect your data, either written or implied,
right,
then you might have a solid breach of contract case.
And last but not least, the court was okay with the but-for causation argument. Yeah.
Even with that time gap between the breach and the harm.
Right.
So just because time has passed doesn't mean your case will be thrown out immediately.
Absolutely. These are all incredibly valuable things to keep in mind if you're interested in data security law.
Yeah, for sure. So let's think about how these principles might apply to different situations that our listeners could face in their legal careers.
Okay.
Let's say there's a data breach at a hospital and sensitive patient medical records are leaked.
Okay, yeah.
How would the court look at a negligence claim in that case, given what we know from Enslin?
That's a great example. In a doctor-patient situation, it's much more likely that the court would say, yep, there's a special relationship here.
Right.
You know, that exception to the economic loss doctrine. Healthcare involves a ton of trust and confidentiality.
Yeah.
So a negligence claim for money lost because of a patient data breach might actually hold up in court.
Yeah, that makes sense, given how sensitive that information is. Okay, let's look at another angle.
What if, in the Enslin case, Coca-Cola had encrypted all those laptops with employee data? How would that have affected Enslin's breach of contract argument?
That's a really important question. If they had used good security, like encryption, it would have been a lot harder for Enslin to say that they didn't reasonably protect his data.
Right.
The court would probably see encryption as proof that they were trying to keep the data safe.
Yeah, yeah.
So that could have weakened his claim that they broke their promise to protect his PII. This just shows how important it is for organizations to take clear steps to protect the data they have.
Yeah, be proactive. So, to sum up, this Enslin v. Coca-Cola case really comes down to understanding a few key legal concepts in the world of data breach litigation.
Right.
The court focused on actual concrete harm for standing.
Mm-hmm.
Then there were the limits of the economic loss doctrine, especially when there isn't a recognized special relationship.
Yep.
And finally, how important contracts are in these data breach cases, whether the promises are written down or implied.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we all navigate this world where data breaches seem to happen more and more.
Right.
It's really interesting to think about how the principles in cases like Enslin might affect data protection laws and the responsibilities of organizations that are dealing with all this sensitive information.
Absolutely.
Like, what steps can organizations take to protect themselves legally and keep that data safe, especially given how courts are approaching these cases?
That's a great point to end on. This case definitely gives us a lot to think about when it comes to navigating the complexities of data breach litigation.
It does.
Thanks for joining me today for this deep dive.
My pleasure.
It was really interesting.
Yeah, it was a good one.
Yeah.
Right.